Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM, HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Vidyut Sridhar, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, a behind-the-scenes look into student org parties, a recap of pop culture news on this week's B-list, the future of Chicago's coldest season, and a poetic remembrance of Black History Month with this week's Well-Versed. Those stories and more coming up. From Northwestern University, this is WNUR News at 6. From themed decorations to booking live bands to convincing people to actually show up, student fundies don't just happen on their own. This Valentine's Day, Unity Fashion Show teamed up with Local Mojo for a party that mixed fashion, live music, and even some love. WNUR's Gabby Shell spoke with the organizers to learn what happens in the lead-up to doors open.
It's Friday night. You know the vibe. You can hear the live music blaring and feel the sweat wicking off of fellow students looking to blow off some post-midterm steam. Instead of dropping a month of grocery money on a trip into Chicago, you shell out a small sum of cash to whichever student organization is throwing tonight's fundy, a name for student-run parties meant to raise money for their group.
Hey, $5
Awesome.
The routine is so seamless it almost feels effort-free. But there's a lot of unseen work that goes into pulling one off. I talked to a few members of Unity Fashion Show and Local Mojo and Yua ahead of last weekend's Valentine's Day fundy to see what goes into the weeks, or more accurately, hours, leading up to the big event.
As any normal student, there's a lot of procrastination involved. I think the majority of texts that have been sent in the group chat have been within the last probably 24 hours, not even 48.
That's Sunny Batra, the Unity co-executive director. She says the group didn't exactly stress the finer points.
Issa and I were sitting there making a shopping list last night. Like, we were like, what makes sense for a budget? Like, how many handles do we actually need? And there was not really much math involved. I'm going to be honest, we probably could have done it in a more systematic way.
But the idea has been in the works for much longer. Unity puts on an annual fundy to raise money for its charity partner, Snow City Arts. This year, they decided to host it ahead of Valentine's Day, in collaboration with Local Mojo, a student group that books shows for both students and local music artists alike. Organizers hope both the live music and Valentine's Day theme touches, like a matchmaking form and a pink and red photo booth, would attract a large crowd. Once the theme was solidified, there came the implementation. Not just figuring out how to hang the match-bearing hearts on the walls.
Does anyone want to tape with me?
Wait, yeah, we need like someone bubbling.
Because I need someone to cut the tape and someone to stick the hearts up.
But figuring out how to play Cupid.
I feel like, honestly, it was really simple. Unity, style, Local Mojo, music. And it was more like, okay, well, we're going to collab with Local Mojo and we're doing matchmaking, so why not make the matchmaking about the interests of probably the people who are going to be showing up, which are people who are into fashion or into music, or probably, maybe, hopefully, into both.
Before any matchmaking could happen, though, there was obviously the question of getting people to show up. Batra says Unity mainly relied on word of mouth.
I was very pro Partyful because I think people love looking at guest lists and watching those numbers grow and seeing that other people are going and then they want to go too.
She says that partnering with Local Mojo also helped draw a crowd. Local Mojo puts on dozens of shows of varying size throughout the quarter. In other words, they're always thinking of how to turn people out. Local Mojo Director of Operations Leora Kurt says some of it is word of mouth.
Obviously, we tell our friends to come to the shows, but it's like almost entirely social media.
And there's a lot more to it than meets the eye.
I feel like that's one of the things, like, oh, like, you just see, like, a video on Instagram, but there's so much work that goes into that. At all of, like, our weekly meetings, we have, like, a whole marketing committee that'll, like, get in a little circle, it's super cute, and, like, brainstorm ideas.
Kurt says there's a familiar formula to booking the bands.
We have a lot of bands that, like, DM us on Instagram, or, like, hey, like, we have new content, like, we have more new songs, new originals, new whatever that, like, we want to perform. We kind of have, like, an ongoing doc with, like, all the bands, but then, like, also we kind of, like, have personal relationships with all of, like, the band members.
Arden Anderson is in Sunday Brunch, one of the bands that played Friday night. She says those personal relationships between bands and booking staff help in preparations.
Getting everyone together and, like, getting everyone organized can be really hard, but they've done a good job for this one.
More than that, the friendly relationships remind everyone, from the bands to the bookers to the hosts, that these fundies aren't so serious.
All in all, in the end, it's just for fun, and that's what we're doing and why we're here and why we want to play tonight.
Batra says she feels the same about the planning process overall.
Putting on a fundie may take a lot of work and does help out the organizations. But at the end of the day, or night, these parties are really a chance for everyone to let loose and celebrate their success as a team.
It's just like, it's such a great time because a lot of our members don't get to talk to each other because we have so many different committees. But then at the fundie is kind of a more casual setting where like members actually get to know each other. So while yes, obviously we really want to be raising money for charity, it's also about bringing our group together in total.
So next time you go to a fundie, take a minute to appreciate all the behind the scenes work. And then take a page out of the organizer's book. Relax, grab a jade, and just have a good time. For WNUR News, I'm Gabby Shell.
Our annual fundraiser, Phone-a-thon, is happening right now. This is the only time in the year that we ask our listeners for support to keep our station on air and commercial-free. Please make a contribution now by going to WNUR.org and clicking donate. All contributions make a difference. Thanks so much. Stay tuned and head to WNUR.org to keep us on the air. Now, it's Friday, which means you're long overdue for a pop culture roundup. Luckily, I have just the thing. Here's Jessica Watts with the Beat List.
Welcome to the Beat List, your weekly roundup of celebrity mess in pop culture. This week, the search continues for Nancy Guthrie, the rom-com smash topping the box office, and U.S. goes for gold at the Winter Olympics. Oscar-winning actor Robert Duvall has died. He is known for his roles in iconic movies such as The Godfather, To Kill a Mockingbird, and Apocalypse Now. His wife announced the news this morning. He was 95. The search continues for Nancy Guthrie, mother of Today Show host Savannah Guthrie. Nancy was first reported missing on February 1st after she did not show up at church. Now, more than 2 weeks later, her family, the FBI, and local police in Arizona are still looking. Her children are asking anyone with information to come forward and for the suspect to reveal themselves, saying it's not too late to do the right thing. Right now, authorities are investigating a glove that was found near the scene. They say they have DNA and will continue their search until she is found. Role Model surprised fans with a special guest from Down Under this weekend. Robert Irwin came out on stage as Sally at Laneway Fest in Perth, Australia. He is the latest surprise celebrity to join Role Model on stage during the singer's hit, Sally When the Wine Runs Out. Wuthering Heights topped the box office charts this weekend. The film's debut, timed perfectly with Valentine's Day, earned a whopping $34.8 billion. It stars Jacob Elordi and Margot Robbie. Norway is leading the overall medal tally at this year's Winter Olympics. 12 of their 28 medals are gold. Italy and the Netherlands are currently in second and third, with the U.S. falling slightly behind in fourth. The games are scheduled to end this weekend. That's all for the B-List this week. Check in next Monday to hear about what happens this week in pop culture. For WNUR News, I'm Jessica Watts.
Since the time of recording, Norway is still leading the Winter Olympics medal count, with the U.S. now in second and Italy in third. 17 out of Norway's 37 current medals have been gold. From negative 38 degree wind chill to 60 degrees and sunny, this winter has been unpredictable, to say the least. So Priya Akella spoke with climate researchers to better understand climate change's impact on what the future holds for Chicago winters.
This year, Chicago saw the coldest and snowiest start to winter in years, reaching a wind chill between negative 30 and negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit on Friday, January 23rd. As snow piled on Deering Lawn, classes moved to Zoom, and students bundled up in their dorms, global warming seemed like a distant thought. And if you were fighting a thick layer of driveway snow with a shovel, it might have even seemed like a comforting thought. But climate change is warming winters faster than any other season, and Chicago is no exception. This winter saw a sudden turn in the past couple weeks, with temperatures consistently above freezing. The snowmen are melting into sidewalk puddles, and stretches of brown, soggy lawns are peeking out. So what can we expect from future Chicago winters?
The trend is that on average, winters are getting warmer or milder.
when we see this really cold spell or this winter storm that's happening, that's sort of natural variability in the climate system, but it doesn't mean that the trend doesn't exist.
That's Anne Sinclair, a PhD candidate in the Department of Earth, Environmental, and Planetary Sciences at Northwestern University. She says short-term temperature drops shouldn't be mistaken as markers for general climate trends. Midwestern winters have changed dramatically over the last decade. Finley Hay Chapman is a postdoctoral researcher in the Climate Change Research Group at Northwestern. He grew up in Madison, Wisconsin.
I've definitely noticed growing up, and especially in like the 2010s and onward, winters getting a lot warmer and more like muddy and gross and wet, as opposed to like cold and snowy.
Aaron Packman is a professor of civil and environmental engineering at Northwestern University and the co-director of the Northwestern Center for Water. He says precipitation patterns have changed.
We've had a number of rainstorms. This is particularly challenging when there's a lot of snow accumulated. You have rain on top of it. It's called a rain on snow event. And we've had a number of them in the winter that have caused a lot of flooding. By 2018, we had like the first big rain on snow event, just a big warm rainstorm in January. So that had basically never happened before. And now we've had three or four of those in the last 10 years.
Cold snaps like this year's are also a product of global warming. The jet stream is an air current that circles the Earth, cutting off Arctic air from the air below. It forms because of extreme temperature differences between the Arctic and the tropics. This creates energy that turns into momentum. But with climate change, the Arctic has been warming faster than the tropics. Essentially, the temperature gap is shrinking. Hay Chapman says that as the jet stream weakens and loses stability, it can cause more polar vortex intrusions of Arctic air traveling south.
We know that climate change is causing that instability. And so we might even see, even if on average, it's going to be warmer in the winter over the whole winter, we might see more of these like small short-term cold snaps because of climate change.
As a city familiar with extreme weather, Chicago is relatively well-equipped for these freezing spells. Packman recommends checking out the City of Chicago Department of Emergency Management's website for resources.
Part of it is just basic sensible advice in terms of how to protect yourself from the cold when you're outside. But the other part of it is warming shelters or other places that people can go if they don't have sufficient heat at home.
Still, not all neighborhoods have the same resources. Hay Chapman is part of a group that's working on a tool to determine heat vulnerability to inform climate policy. He says these urban planning disparities are often in lower income communities of color, where there's often less green architecture.
When it snows outside and the snow sticks on the ground, man-made structures get a lot colder and the snow can stick around and stay in areas that have like a lot of concrete, as opposed to areas that have a lot of like trees, soil, grassy environments. That snow can melt a lot easier.
He says that as temperatures go above freezing, rain, not snow, will become our primary winter challenge. This will hit neighborhoods on the south side where there is less flood-safe architecture particularly hard. Sinclair says there are some strategies that can help the city deal with flooding.
You can pave with certain materials that are better at absorbing water, and we can kind of create infrastructure for floodwater control.
She says climate change is intertwined with social justice.
The folks who are houseless, for example, are going to be the most impacted by the extreme heat and the extreme cold. And so the best way to fix that is to create a system where nobody is living on the street.
For many people, thinking about a changing climate can cause stress or grief. Sinclair has some tools that may help. Reading poetry offers her a fresh perspective when she needs it.
It's good to remember, especially as a natural scientist, that the world's really beautiful, both in terms of the human world and also like our natural environment.
She also encourages open dialogue about feelings related to the climate.
I think there are a lot of people who are sort of secretly dealing with grief around climate change. And because it's become a politicized issue, I think that a lot of folks don't feel the ability to kind of talk about it. Like any form of grief, we need to be able to feel it.
Above all, it can be empowering to know we have some power to help combat the consequences of climate change. Hay Chapman has some ideas to make Chicago more climate safe.
A very simple way to do that, at least from the policy side, would just be subsidizing air conditioning units for low-income housing. Or a lot of the people who are most vulnerable are lower income and happen to be renters. So another route the city could go with this is requiring landlords to have air conditioning units and putting the onus on them to provide for their residents.
Pacman says infrastructure adjustments like green roofs or tree planting may help.
I think the strategy now is not to rely as much on very large and expensive centralized infrastructure, but to use that as sort of a core capability and figure out how to build something more flexible on top of it.
On the individual level, Pacman says there are some things we can do.
Vote with your dollars, spend money on products that are more sustainable, on energy sources that are more renewable, and also encourage companies and politicians to do the same.
Hey Chapman emphasizes being active in your community.
Go show up to your local older person meetings and try to talk to the issues you think are important in your community, like planting trees or improving access to cooling.
He encourages people to look after vulnerable neighbors.
Like the single old lady that lives down the block, just try to check in on her when it's super hot outside.
In the middle of long winters like this year's, it's nice to remember the memories the season has given us. Pacman remembers enjoying record snowfall with his daughter during his first year in the city.
It kept piling up, and there was like several feet, a meter of snow by the end of December, and it just stayed on the ground until March. So I had a toddler at the time, so we built kind of a little slalom run thing, and I would pull her around in the backyard on her sled.
Hey Chapman loves the city's ice rink.
It's called the Daily Ice Ribbon. That's been one of my favorite parts of Chicago winters.
And Sinclair has found comfort in the season.
When we had the first snowstorm this year, I had an amazing Saturday where I didn't have to leave the house at all. Like, that never happens, you know? So I stayed inside. I was listening to an audiobook and I just like watched the snow all day. I was like decorating my apartment for Christmas and it felt really cozy.
So stay warm this winter and enjoy all that it has to offer. For WNUR News, I'm Sabria Kella.
And lastly, to celebrate Black History Month, Dallas Downey has a poem for the occasion.
Hello. Have you taken a deep breath today? Welcome to WNUR News' poetry segment, Well Versed. Here, you will hear timely poem readings to help you relax, reflect, and reconnect. Black History Month is celebrated annually in February. This month is intended to honor the triumphs, struggles, and contributions of Black people to U.S. culture and history. The month aims to emphasize collective education, recognition of ancestors, and we address the ongoing racial injustices present in America. Amanda Gorman is a celebrated African-American poet, activist, and she is also the youngest inaugural poet in American history. She read her acclaimed poem, An Ode We Owe, at the 2022 United Nations General Assembly, where she urged global action on poverty, climate change, and inequalities. Amanda's works focus on themes of race, feminism, and social change. And now, here is an excerpt from An Ode We Owe. Together, we won't just be the generation that tries, but the generation that triumphs. Let us see a legacy where tomorrow is not driven by the human condition, but by our human conviction. And while hope alone can't save us now, with it we can brave the now, because our hardest change hinges on our darkest challenges. Thus may our crisis be our cry, our crossroad, the oldest ode we owe each other. We chime it for the climate, for our communities. We shall respect and protect every part of this planet, hand it to every heart on this earth until no one's worth is rendered by the race, gender, class, or identity they were born. This morn, let it be sworn that we are one human kin, grounded not just by the griefs we bear, but by the good we begin. To anyone out there, I ask that you care before it is too late, that you live aware and awake, that you lead with love in hours of hate. I challenge you to heed this call. I dare you to shape our fate. Above all, I dare you to do good so that the world might be great. Thank you so much for listening. To read the full poem, head to WNURnews.org, and I hope you enjoy the rest of our broadcast. For WNUR News, I'm Dallas Daly.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. It's sayonara to the warmer weather of previous days. Tonight's temps will stay below freezing, hovering in the mid-20s and low 30s. Saturday's high is 34 with a low of 22, and Sunday has a high of 30 and a low of 18. Now taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. 6 of 15 Democratic Party candidates for Illinois' 9th Congressional District debated last night at the Palm House. The event, hosted by Pink Poster Club, saw major candidates like State Senator Laura Fine and Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss clash over issues like who they are accepting campaign donations from. Yesterday, the Chicago Bears released a statement supporting Indiana legislative efforts to relocate the storied NFL franchise to Northwest Indiana. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker said, though, that his state's officials are in ongoing talks with the Bears, who currently play inside Chicago city limits in Soldier Field. Today, the Supreme Court voted 6-3 to strike down President Trump's extensive global tariffs. The move angered the president, who said after the ruling that he has enacted a new 10% global tariff. And last night, news broke that Grey's Anatomy star Eric Dane died on Thursday, February 19th. Dane gained acclaim for his role as Dr. Mark Sloan, nicknamed McSteamy, on the show, and had publicly revealed he was diagnosed with ALS. He was 53. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. As a reminder, our annual fundraiser phone-a-thon is happening right now. This is the only time of the year that we ask our listeners for support to keep our station on air and commercial-free. Please make a contribution now by going to WNUR.org and clicking donate. All contributions make a difference. Thanks so much, stay tuned, and head to WNUR.org to keep us on the air. Our producer today is Ethan Pan. And our reporters are Gabby Shell, Supriya Akella, Jessica Watts, and Dallas Downey. I'm Vidit Sridhar. Catch our next newscast Monday, February 23rd. Now, back to scheduled programming.